Hello, this is Bob Damaris, broadcasting to you from West Virginia on 7 February 2006. I'm a concerned American speaking to you about the imminent destruction that our people face. If you are unwilling to act now, you are part of the problem, not part of the solution. This program is written, produced, and spoken by Robert A. Damaris, Ph.D., who is solely responsible for its content. Today's program is entitled Mexico, Hellhole of North America, and it was recorded live without editing. Let us talk about Mexico to make sure that we all understand that it is not the vacationer's paradise that the liars that write the travel sections of your newspapers claim. First, let me explain the obvious. The newspaper travel section exists only because the travel companies pay for the advertisements in that section. It is written for those companies, not for you. The travel section is as fake as professional wrestling, and it is as false as the publicity that Michael Jackson's public relations agents plant about how Mr. Jackson cares about our children. First, let us talk about the famous, or should I say infamous, Acapulco. In fact, today, it is more properly referred to as Narcapulco, for the narcotics that are sold retail through 800 to 1,000 stores in that city. This activity is supposed to be illegal. However, rival gangs fight for these stores. They use machine guns, but the preferred weapon is to just toss a fragmentation grenade or two through the doorway. However, even greater than the retail business is the wholesale business. But before getting into drugs, let us talk a bit about the city of Acapulco itself. Like most Mexican cities, the population of once sleepy little Acapulco is exploding. The population is somewhere between 700,000 and 1.2 million. Unlike what the travel sections might suggest, over 90% of tourists visiting Acapulco are Mexicans. In fact, far more Mexican criminals visit Acapulco as tourists as do Americans. The Great Horseshoe Bay at Acapulco still appears to be the great, truly beautiful natural creation that it once was. But civilization in Acapulco, if it ever existed, is deteriorating. Garbage is thrown in the streets and washed into the bay. The mayor, Felix Salgado, who has been in office only 2 months, just shrugs and says he is helpless to get garbage pickup service fully restored. Broken sewer pipes dump raw sewage into the bay. The Great Bay is now just a cesspool whose bottom is littered with hundreds of tons of garbage. Of course, the mayor has a priority that is higher than maintaining minimum sewage and garbage collection services. His priority is just staying alive. That is where the narcotics gangs come in. Acapulco long has been the chief transshipment point where Colombian cocaine destined for the U.S. enters Mexico. The numerous rocky coves make excellent places to unload drugs. The Colombian vessels are safe from the Mexican Navy and police boats, which watch but rarely interfere. It is here that the Colombian cartels turn over billions of dollars worth of cocaine to the Mexican cartels. And the fields around Acapulco are alive with poppies and marijuana to make Acapulco a major center for drugs of choice. Mayor Salgado says the current explosion in violence is because, quote, Acapulco has been a place with a strong presence by the Sinaloa cartel, and now there is an attempt by an armed Gulf cartel, the Zetas, to control the territory, unquote. The Zetas are the Gulf cartel's private elite bandito army. It is widely reported in the U.S. news media that Sinaloa cartel controls not just the drug business in Acapulco, but the local police, the state of Guerrero police, and the federal police assigned to that area. It also controls all three major political parties in that area. On 3 February 2006, the Dallas Morning News reported that it had obtained information from a Mexican government document that said that narco traffickers openly move convoys of up to 30 vehicles through the city with apparent complete immunity from being stopped. Occasionally, gunmen armed with machine guns or assault rifles can be seen getting in and out of armored luxury vehicles or swaggering down the streets. The police just look the other way. Mexican police say they have no choice. They say the banditos say, "Take our silver or we'll give you lead." But the truth is that most Mexicans can be bought, and bought cheaply. An early move by the Zetas ended in disaster for them. In May 2005, more than 10 Zetas slipped into Acapulco, intent on kidnapping some local leaders of the Sinaloa cartel. 5 Zetas were captured by Sinaloa gunmen, taken to a Sinaloa stronghold, and tortured. They have not been seen since and are presumed to have been murdered, probably tortured to death. The Zetas learned that it's hard to muscle in when the rival narco traffickers control the government at all levels. But that is a problem that can be fixed. The second in command of the state police was walking out of an expensive restaurant in the tourist section of Acapulco when he was mowed down by gunfire. In Mexico, it is not enough to sneak up and kill someone. The Mexican bandito must prove that he's macho and prove that he can kill his enemies at will. Much of the killing is done in the open. It sends a message to the enemy. The Dallas Morning News article is based in part on official evidence that 8 AFI agents in Acapulco were operating openly with the Sinaloa cartel. The AFI is the Mexican Federal Police, the Federales. Although the Sinaloa cartel has some agents in the Mexican Army, the Mexican Army, despite its incompetence and slowness, is much feared. The Army has unlimited manpower and has the heavy weaponry to defeat the cartel, if it comes to an open battle. Thus, the Sinaloa cartel maintains a constant presence to watch those Army bases. By the time that Army vehicles have left their post, the cartel has been alerted by telephone. On February 20, January 2006, at about sundown, 3 men in a brand new Volkswagen Jetta pulled up to an Acapulco restaurant. 5 professional hitmen, armed with assault rifles, appeared from nowhere, stepped up to the Jetta, and poured lead into the windows from point-blank range. The 3 occupants were ripped to shreds by dozens of bullets, and the driver's head was blown to bits. Who killed who is not apparent. Mayor Salgado just shrugs and chalks it off to another drug-related killing. There were 3 single killings the next week. Then on Friday, 27 January 2006, at 10:20 in the morning, there was a major shootout, the details of which aren't clear. The police chief and his small army of personal bodyguards were armed with machine guns and fragmentation grenades. They were in hot pursuit of 3 sports utility vehicles full of Sinaloa gunmen. Apparently, the Sinaloa gunmen were wearing uniforms of the AFI, the Federales. They also had body armor and machine guns and grenades. One of the SUVs escaped, but the other 2 were trapped in an intersection. It was a shootout with the police chief's personal army, backed by real AFI gunmen on one side versus 6 Sinaloa gunmen in the 2 trapped vehicles on the other side. The Miami Herald described it as, quote, "Members of the city police, along with units from the Federal Investigation Agency, battled drug hitmen armed with heavy machine guns and fragmentation grenades," unquote. A white SUV, one of the 2 vehicles of the Sinaloa gunmen, was hit with a grenade, burst into flames, and the gunman leapt from the 2 vehicles. 1 gunman was on fire. Both sides opened up with machine guns and grenades. The police chief, Pablo Rodriguez Cruz, was hit and went down, and one of the chief's gunmen was hit and fell. But the Sinaloa gunmen were badly outgunned and began to fall. Eventually the gunfire stopped. Four Sinaloa gunmen were dead, riddled with lead. Two gunmen were injured and surrendered. The police chief and one of his bodyguards survived their wounds. And Mayor Salgado is worried that reports of violence will ruin Acapulco's new marketing campaign intended to lure U.S. college students to take spring break down there. Don't worry, Mayor Salgado. Except for U.S. cities with high Mexican populations like Dallas and San Diego, the warfare in Acapulco was not published in U.S. newspapers. That was the end of action within Acapulco. But elsewhere within Guerrero State, there was other action that day. Two helicopters from the Attorney General's office took off at 12 noon on a drug interdiction mission. They were to spray some illegal crops. As they approached their target, they encountered heavy gunfire. Arthur Dominguez's helicopter was hit, badly damaged, and started down. He was able to maintain enough control that he managed to jump free just before it crashed. He leapt up, uninjured, and signaled to the second helicopter pilot, who swooped down and picked up Dominguez before the gunman could capture or kill him. The second helicopter was also hit by ground fire, but managed to return to its helipad. Mexico is quickly becoming like Colombia. The difference is that Colombia is thousands of miles from the U.S. Mexico is just across the border, and Mexicans are slithering into the U.S. at an uncontrolled rate. To the extent that Mexicans come to the U.S., the U.S. will become like Mexico. Fox's Mexican government claims that it is at war with the cartels and has targeted the four great strongholds of the cartels, Acapulco, Nuevo Laredo, Tijuana, and Culiacan, the capital of Sinaloa State. Sinaloa is on the west coast of Mexico and is 800 miles south of the U.S. border and is about halfway between the U.S. border and Acapulco. However, of much more importance is Nuevo Laredo, which is just across the Rio Grande River from Laredo, Texas. It is said that as much as 40% of illegal drugs from Mexico pass into the U.S. in the general vicinity of Nuevo Laredo. In January 2006, El Presidente Vicente Fox quickly moved an additional 300 of his federal police force, the Federales, to Nuevo Laredo to bolster the existing Federales, AFI agents, state police, and Nuevo Laredo police who cannot or will not control the city. Of course, to the bandits, these are just 300 new Foxistas to pay off. Let us examine recent history in Nuevo Laredo. On 1 August 2003, tensions were high between the Nuevo Laredo police, who remain loyal to the Gulf Cartel, and the Los Negros group of hitmen who are working for the Pacific Coast Cartel. Only the day before, three cops had been mowed down. Two of them died. At 2 a.m., police saw a sinister SUV circling a police station. They tried to stop it, and it ended up chasing it. It was joined by a second vehicle, described as an armored Grand Cherokee with Texas license plates. A grunting gun battle ensued, and soon two more vehicles joined the convoy being chased. It sounded like a war. The Mexican police radioed back to headquarters in a panic. "They're firing at us! They're firing at us!" And they asked for assistance from the state police. Headquarters told them that the state police were not available and urged them to continue the pursuit by saying, return fire for our fallen comrades. The convoy of four fleeing Los Negros vehicles ran into a Mexican army ambush at the corner of Paso Colon and Reforma. Trapped between the roadblock and the pursuing police, the nine gunmen were forced to shoot it out. During the fierce 45-minute firefight, two of the Los Negros SUVs exploded and burned. Eyewitnesses say the Army used a bazooka or rocket-pelled grenades. The Army insists that the explosions were from bullets accidentally hitting vehicle gas tanks. Three gunmen were killed in the explosions, and six others, all wounded, surrendered. One was a U.S. citizen from Laredo, Texas. Police captured a tenth man. He was none other than Juan Manuel Munoz Morales, the chief federal prosecutor for that area. More on him later. In the two remaining vehicles, police found two 9mm MP5 machine guns, four AR-15s, four AK-47s, one Taurus 9mm pistol, two Beretta 9mm pistols, and one unidentified 9mm pistol. In addition, they found one grenade, a two-way Kenwood radio, two body armor vests, seven cellular telephones, two knitted black caps, and numerous documents. Later, police found two abandoned light armored trucks, one of which contained an undisclosed number of hand grenades. Apparently, a light armored truck refers to SUVs with customized armor protection. The bodies of two men were later found south of town. They were half naked, handcuffed, and had been shot numerous times. But executed by who? The Naval Laredo Police? The State Police? Los Negros? The Federales? The Gulf Cartel? The Army? Who knows? Juan Manuel Munoz Morales was arrested and whisked away to Mexico City. He is charged with official corruption and with helping the Gulf Cartel. Yet he was allegedly caught assisting the Gulf Cartel's enemy, Los Negros, who were in town to kill or drive out the Gulf Cartel. Sometime during the shootout, he radioed the police. He told them to let the convoy go because the convoy members were Mexican law enforcement agents. After the surviving gunmen were arrested, Juan Manuel Munoz Morales asked the Federales to put the captured gunmen in his custody. In addition to Morales, five other officials were arrested. 200 state police, 200 soldiers, and 150 federal agents poured into Naval Laredo. They took control of the airport. They set up on street corners. Army Humvees armed with 50 caliber machine guns mounted on the roofs and manned by soldiers in full body armor patrolled the streets. For weeks, the police were still using vehicles shot full of bullet holes from the battle with drug dealers. Army helicopters were flying at treetop level to establish a constant presence. It's not clear whose side the new forces were loyal to. Residents say it looked like a war zone. Of Naval Laredo's 700 police, 200 were suspended without pay for taking bribes and assisting drug traffickers. Then 18 of the remaining 500 tested positive for drugs. On 23 August 2003, Naval Laredo Mayor Jose Manuel Suarez Lopez suspended his own police chief. He vows a clean sweep of corruption, but there have been plenty of clean sweeps before, and corruption continued, unabated. The American media reported that the Naval Laredo police have given up patrolling the streets. Instead, the police simply wait for a crime to be reported, and then they go out in groups to take a report before returning to the safety of the police station. At the time, U.S. officials said a full-scale bandito war may spread to the U.S. side of the border. But that was 2.5 years ago. What is Naval Laredo like today? In 2005, Naval Laredo got another new police chief, who vowed to clean out the drug gangs. Only 7 hours after he was sworn in, he was murdered in a hail of gunfire. 13 other cops and a city councilman were also killed in 2005. In addition to the massive purge of police officers in 2005, in June of 2005, most of the local police were fired for being in the pay of the drug cartels. And yes, it is spreading across the border. Naval Laredo is connected to Webb County, Texas by four bridges. The sheriff of Webb County, Rick Flores, says drug gangs have already gained strong beachheads on the American side. In December, on the Texas side, a young man and his pregnant wife were sitting in a parking lot. He was mowed down in what the local media claims was an obvious cartel hit. The Mexican bandidos, operating inside the U.S., have level 4 armored vests, which makes them immune to any handgun fire and most rifle fire from the American deputies. The Mexicans have satellite telephones that are essentially impossible to tap. On 3 February 2006, Julie L. Myers, Assistant Secretary of ICE, that is, the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency, announced the result of 3 raids on the American side of the border in Laredo. On 12 January 2006, ICE agents captured a resident with 2 AK-47 assault rifles, 2 Israeli Uzis, and a large amount of cash and Mexican drugs. On 26 January, ICE stormed the home of another Laredo resident after he allegedly sold a fully automatic AK-47 assault rifle and cocaine to an undercover ICE agent. The raid netted 6 kits to assemble fully automatic weapons and at least 20 assembled firearms, including AK-47 and AR-15 assault rifles, pistols, and sniper rifles. Other items seized include 2 silencers, 26 firearms magazines, 2 bulletproof vests, sniper scopes, police scanners, pinhole cameras, 2,600 rounds of ammunition, and quantities of cocaine, methamphetamines, and cash. The next day, on 27 January, ICE took out another Laredo, Texas house and confiscated 2 completed improvised explosive devices, IEDs, and materials for making approximately 33 more IEDs. These are essentially pipe bombs. Agents also captured a considerable quantity of fragmentation grenade components, as well as 65 firearms magazines, a silencer, and other firearms components. Let's stop here to make a couple points. Seizing all those guns, grenades, and explosives has only a limited and temporary effect. A Republican like Julie Myers should know that guns don't kill people, people kill. Assault weapons, machine guns, grenades, and pipe bombs do not kill. Mexican kill. We don't need gun control. We need Mexican control. 2. It won't take many massacres by Mexican bandidos in the U.S. before stricter and stricter gun control is imposed here. Republicans will cave in quickly when the media puts the heat on. They always have caved in. They always will cave in. Mexico has nearly total gun control. A Mexican rancher has difficulty in just getting a permit for a gun to shoot coyotes. Yet bandidos walk openly with fully automatic weapons. It's going to happen in the U.S. also. It is just a matter of time. 4. You idiots out there who are always screaming that you are for the Second Amendment better wake up. You have a choice to make now. You either get rid of the Mexicans or the government will take your guns. It is that simple. The freedom to own guns is strictly a white concept. Now let us get back to the subject of Naval Laredo, whose population is growing and is something over 300,000 already. In January 2006, El Presidente Vicente Fox sent more Mexican federal police reinforcements. That's because Naval Laredo's new mayor, Omar Pintel, flatly refuses to have the local police to try to control or arrest drug dealers. Mayor Pintel says, quote, "The local police department is to prevent robberies. People think our job is to fight the cartel, but it's not," unquote. A common shakedown technique used by Mexican police is to arrest a U.S. citizen on fake charges, drag her or him to an ATM machine, and force the Norte Americano to withdraw as much money as possible as the ATM will permit. The Mexican police are getting rich from ATM extortion/kidnappings, and from payments from the thousands of brothels in Mexican border towns. The Mexican police officer is not your friend. He's an extortionist, a brute, and a pimp. Some of you idiots out there right now are saying, the culture down there is what causes the Mexican police to be corrupt. That reasoning is faulty. Culture is the product of a people. People are not a product of culture. The Mexicans made and have had the same culture for 400 years. It is their genetics that causes the Mexicans to be the way that they are. In January 2006, Mexican Foreign Minister Senor Luis Ernesto Derbez said the U.S. was overreacting to the 27 confirmed kidnappings of U.S. citizens in Mexico in the last 6 months. He bragged that of the 27, 15 were released or ransomed, and that only two bodies have been found. He has no idea what happened to the other 11, who are presumed dead. On 2 February 2006, Mexican federal police arrested two people in connection with a drug-related murder. The federales say the two were the trigger pullers involved in the shootings of two men 3 days earlier. One of the victims died. The two suspects were Rebecca Garcia, who listed a U.S. address, and Javiera Escalera, who listed a Mexican address. Had these two been arrested up here in Pocahontas County, West Virginia, one deputy would have transported them to the lockup. But in Naval Laredo, the federales weren't taking any chances and brought the two suspects to the lockup in a heavily armed convoy of vehicles. When they turned into the driveway of the police headquarters, they were greeted with a burst of machine gun fire, said to last 5 seconds. Then a second burst ripped into the convoy. Rebecca Garcia and a Mexican police officer were injured. A rifle bullet that struck the officer as he sat in his vehicle ripped him across the top of both thighs. Had it been a little lower, he likely would have bled to death in his police vehicle in the driveway of the police station. The gunman or gunmen escaped, and it is unknown whether the gunmen were retaliating against the police for the arrest of the two suspects or retaliating against the two suspects for the earlier shooting. To a Mexican, it doesn't much matter. The gunmen or gunmen were just trying to prove that they were local Bravo, crazy brave. It is a genetic trait of their American Indian ancestors. The street was left covered with glass shards from shattered vehicle glass, machine gun cartridge casings, and the green fluid flowing from bullet-riddled radiators. For the remainder of the day, the government buildings closed their bulletproof steel window shutters, and heavily armed and armored patrols guarded them. This morning, before making this broadcast, I checked the latest news reports to make sure that no information had been exposed that would make part of this broadcast inaccurate. I found another important incident in Naval Laredo. First, I must present a bit of background because this incident concerns the newspaper El Mañana, which is the newspaper in Naval Laredo. The head of the newspaper, Daniel Rojas, openly admits that he and his staff are terrified of the drug bandidos. At one time, El Mañana published the names of victims in drug shootings. For example, Juan Valdez was killed by assailants while coming out of a barber shop. In Mexico, the victim is usually another bandido, and he has friends that threatened the newspaper and its reporters. Not only does El Mañana now not publish the name of the victim in a killing, but also they often don't run the story at all. Someone is machine gunned to death in broad daylight on a main city street, and the story is never mentioned in the newspaper. Even that is not enough to satisfy the bandidos. Yesterday, 6 February 2006, four gunmen with assault rifles forced their way into the newspaper's offices. They opened fire and tossed at least one grenade. Bullets ripped through thin walls and smashed glass partitions. In less than 1 minute, the banditos were gone. Employees stared at each other, their bodies cut by flying glass shards and debris. Then they found a reporter lying in the newsroom. He had been shot by at least 6 rifle bullets. He may not survive. That is the way it is in Mexico. It is no different than it was in the days of Pancho Villa, except now the banditos have fully automatic weapons and grenades. No amount of pressure by the U.S. government can significantly change what is happening in Mexico. No matter how many billions of dollars of aid that we send to them, and no matter how many experts that we send down there to train them, the Mexican is not going to change. Our experts sent to Mexico from the Army at Fort Bragg and from the FBI have only managed to make the Mexicans into more efficient and more effective killers. That expertise is coming home to roost. Mexicans are swarming across our border, and they bring with them their genetic predispositions for corruption, laziness, alcoholism, drug use, prostitution, high noise, high birth rates, and local bravo violence. All the Republicans and all the Democrats can't change the Mexican, but they easily could have prevented the Mexicans from coming into the U.S. But they did not, and they will not. And the ultimate blame for this falls on only 2 people. It falls on you, and it falls on me. We know it is wrong, and we refuse to do anything. To see wrong and not to act is evil. Bush refuses to do anything, but he doesn't think anything is wrong. The Jewish control media wants more Mexicans to come into the U.S. because it's good for Jews. The Jews thrive in a multiracial society. Join me in getting white Americans alarmed about this issue. If you don't, we shall perish, and all the desperate fighting for survival by your ancestors will have been in vain. It will have been for nothing. It will be your fault. They lived to get here, and you failed to do what they would have done. Until next time, this is Bob Damaris speaking to you from West Virginia and reminding you that, to the extent that Mexicans come to the U.S., the U.S. will become like Mexico. This program was recorded on 7 February 2006. Thank you.